University of Colorado.
Thank you for joining us at CU On the Air. We're talking today with CU Denver professor Lila Tolderlund about the Green Roof Initiative passed by Denver voters in the fall 2017 election. The initiative generally requires rooftop gardens for new buildings with at least 25,000 square feet of roof and for roof replacement on existing buildings. So what is a green roof?
The green roof is a living system. It's a layer of growing media, plants, irrigation on top of this drainage layer and concrete slab that we typically have for roofs anyway. I think that architects, when they build buildings, they typically don't go back after 5 years and check and see how is the building doing. They are on to the next job. But as green roofers and landscape architects, it's actually really important. It's one of the number one reasons why green roofs all over, not just in this climate, fail, is because we don't maintain them right. It's a living layer, and it's essential that we keep checking if this system is growing, and the healthier it is, the better it performs. All the great things that green roofs and green infrastructures do.
Any type of landscaping is going to require maintenance. And as you say, this is just a change in terms of the building's infrastructure. So are developers, architects thinking more about that?
I think that's one of the big hurdles is really education and understanding different types of landscapes on structure and what these different types of landscapes can do. So as a city, we could say, well, why would we in Denver implement green roofs? Why was the Green Roof Initiative passed in the first place? Urban heat island effect, when I talk to people, is the number one reason why we would want green roofs. I usually ask that question. And it's a good one. That's why Chicago got all of their green roofs. That was sort of one of their main objectives. I think people, more and more people understand that the importance of the environment that they live in, and as more and more people, 80% of the population in the U.S. lives in cities. So when we say the environment, we mean the city. So nature is not something that happens out there. People are getting more and more educated about the value of simply having nature in cities. So not just green roofs. I think it's, of course, part of a much bigger solution where green roofs is one green infrastructure, along with parks and greenways and green buildings. So I think people just intuitively know that we need more green, we need more biomass to balance out these hard surfaces.
Is it particularly beneficial for places like Denver with arid climates? A lot of sunshine?
I think the main hurdle right now in our climate for green infrastructure is this perception that green roofs is very green. It's associated with something that is lush, use a lot of water, and that really isn't the case. There are studies that show that adding this layer on top of a building actually cools the building, so there's less temperature variance. So you know Colorado. Just within a day or two, we have these extreme variances. And green roofs can help mitigate some of these temperature variances. They add a layer of insulation and help cool the building in the summer and heat the building in the winter. Some of the savings that comes with the reduction in heating cooling, you can translate into water savings. So again, in Colorado, we talk about green roofs that are arid. They use plants that are low water, that are adapted to this climate, adaded to this extreme freeze-thaw cycle, and use quite small amounts of irrigation. The Denver Botanic Gardens has a number of studies. They have a website. You can go in and see over 100 plants that they've tested over the past 10 years and see the survival rate. And you can see irrigation amounts last year and 3 years ago, for example, they didn't irrigate their green roof at all because we had enough precipitation. Or it's very little. You know, it's really down to twice a week for just a few minutes or once every day for a minute in the middle of the night. So already at the city's second Green Roof Task Force meeting, Austin Kamarik with Denver Water presented his data based on 2014 GIS data for Denver roofs. And he applied the ordinance. He said, well, if we go in and as the ordinance require for buildings that are above 25,000 square feet, 20% or up, depending on the size, he concluded that this would not be an issue at all. He went out as far as 2045 with a growth of 1.5% per year. And the added water use was so low that he's like, that is not a concern of Denver Water. So it's interesting, this task force, the meetings are slowly but methodically going through each type of benefit, urban heat island effect, stormwater management, quality and quantity, air pollution, and water. Adding this layer of insulation can save energy, which equates to savings of water that far exceed the irrigation that's needed to keep the system healthy and alive. And the healthier the system, the better it performs. So we're interested in keeping these systems healthy.
So perhaps we can back up a little bit. The city of Denver established a task force after the ordinance passed to look at perhaps what adjustments might be made. What kind of things is that task force looking at?
They're going through all the pros and cons. They're going through the ordinance and how it's written. They are basically spending the next 6 months in educating themselves and understanding fully what it means, what green roofs mean in Colorado, and what the benefits are, and then making recommendations back to the city.
It's a high bar that has to pass the Denver City Council, correct?
It's more than 50% the way I understand it. So it's done, I think, so far very respectfully, honoring the voters. And as I said, it's done very methodically. It's being facilitated in a way that everybody has a voice, everybody voice concerns. I think the facilitator has been very clear and efficient in having a good open conversation. And clearly, there are members on the task force that have very different opinions, but it feels to me that they are beginning to see common ground.
So what we heard initially was, I think, a fair amount of concern among developers and property managers, and their concerns were many, including cost and retrofitting buildings, perhaps. Do you feel like those concerns are being alleviated through the task force?
Not quite yet, but I think I can kind of see that it hopefully will go there. One of the benefits with green roofs and adding this living layer on top of the roof membrane is that it takes care of the waterproof membrane. We have many studies also in the U.S. now that show that roof membranes last 2 to 3 times longer. Well, so the cost savings associated with not having to change out your roof membrane every 10 to 15 years is significant. So one of the things that were brought up at the task force meeting was funding through PACE, which is Property Assessed Clean Energy Program. And they finance energy efficient, renewable energies, water conservation upgrade to buildings up to 20 years. And when you sell the building, you can pass that on to the new owner. So to me, that was one of the small aha moments. Another one, I think, was this business of that the green roof layer actually can protect the building. So again, these extreme freeze thaw cycles that we have for roof membranes is detrimental. We have a blast of UV light in this climate that is unreal for any kind of material. Hail. So instead of putting all this money into re-roofing after a hailstorm, if we have green roofs and green infrastructures, that actually is a buffer. And many of the plants that we recommend that are adapted to this climate, that are stress tolerant, are also adapted to a hailstorm.
So the task force is going to come back with recommendations perhaps in May. Where do you see this going after the task force recommendations come in? Understanding we don't know what those will be, but what's the future of this?
It has a number of technical advisors that's separate from the task force. So I sit in on the task force meetings. They are open to the public. And the way I understand it, the city aspired to, at that point, with the task force, end up with specific recommendations to city council. At that point, I think also it looks like the technical advisors will be called in and help with recommendations and assessments, which is separate from the task force.
What kind of people are on the task force?
There are developers, Denver Housing Authority, Xcel Energy, Denver Water, CSU. There's a green roof maintenance developer and maintenance, Andy Kreith, Green Roofs Colorado. Jennifer Buselow, CSU, that's done a number of studies at the EPA green roof. and that is a green roof expert teaching at CSU.
It seems like one of the big concerns was when roofs are replaced or membranes are replaced, that it would be cost prohibitive, mostly in terms of what the structure will bear. Are those concerns real?
Yes, I think that it's a very valid concern is if the structural capacity is there for condo from the 50s that's more than four stories. And there are some exceptions in the ordinance that if the developer can prove that the building for some reason cannot carry that, doesn't have the structural capacity to carry an additional green roof, that they are not required to do a green roof.
There's a waiver process.
There is, yes.
I think that when the initiative passed handily, it really surprised a lot of people. Did it surprise you, and why do you think everyone else was so surprised?
Yeah. Yes. Part of me was surprised, and part of me wasn't, like I said earlier. Denver is the number three on the list for hottest cities, the number one problem of urban heat island effect. We're just behind Albuquerque and Las Vegas. And I think the people of Denver, we just want a better city than that. We're 11th on the list for air pollution. I think that people just want to take on ownership of the climate in their cities.
People seem to be all for sustainable buildings, but they sometimes balk when it comes down to what is the cost of that. Does the benefit outweigh the cost?
But green infrastructure, which includes green roofs, they have so many other benefits, health benefits. Looking at a green roof, studies show that in a hospital, people recover faster when they look at nature than if they look at a red brick wall. Habitat, growing food, food production. Part of Denver's sustainability goal is that we, by 2030, I think it is, grow 20% of our food in the cities. Well, green spaces, and not just green roofs, this can of course also, and maybe more easily, be grown on ground, but it certainly can also be grown on roof surfaces. So when we talk about green roofs and the cost benefit, a lot of people come with one single benefit. It's like they look at only air pollution, or they look at only stormwater quantity, not even quality, which is another really big one for us. We have all of these hot surfaces, and when we get a rainfall, all this pollution really challenges our rivers and streams. And the temperature is another one we often don't talk about. But these surfaces are hotter, and just that water has a degree or two is detrimental to aquatic life. It's a little bit like, how do you put a value on a tree? Well, there are some studies that begin to do that. They affect many things, right? They clean the air, their habitat, biodiversity, they shade, they raise real estate. They do many things, right? Some of the things, and that's what the Green Roof Task Force, I think, is doing quite well, systematically go through each of the benefits and say, well, how is that a benefit to us in this climate? What are the cost trade-offs? And I think slowly but surely we're beginning to add them all up and beginning to see the bigger picture.
We talked about using plants that are suitable for Denver's arid climate. I think some people have trouble just envisioning what is a green roof, what does it look like? So if you were to describe it to someone, understanding there's no one answer, how would you describe it?
If we start with what is a green roof here in Denver, what are examples is REI. They have a green roof right in front of their entrance. So unlike many other big box America businesses that has parking right up to the entrance, they specifically chose to create that buffer, this landscape. And I take clients and city officials. That's one place I take, well, this we can really create anywhere in the city, which is quite amazing. It's like a little mini Front Range landscape that has a recirculating water feature. Now, the EPA green roof is another one that is being talked a lot about. That's a very shallow and probably more similar to the ones that we will begin to see implemented now on new buildings or retrofit buildings after the ordinance has passed. The answer, I think, lies in looking at pre-development conditions. So for us, that means the native prairie. And in some essence, one of my latest projects, we did exactly that. We took the native prairie and wrapped it up onto the arts and music buildings at CSU Pueblo. I worked with a company, local company in town, and we're very excited. We had our first growing season last year, so we're very excited to see how it goes. But that's a mix of local native prairie grasses and wildflowers that simply is you can say, is kind of wrapped up onto the building. Intuitively, I think that using things of the place is the best cost-efficient, most sustainable, smart thing to do for cities. And that includes us. It includes the prairie.
People have a vision of an entire roof covered with plants, and some developers look at it in terms of where is the HVAC system going to go? How does the green roof fit in with what's already up on roofs?
The green roof ordinance requires a different percentage of coverage depending on the size of the building. So if the building is 25,000 square feet or above, you are required to do a certain percentage of green roof. It starts at 20% and it goes up to buildings that are 200,000 square feet, for example, have to put in 60% coverage of green roofs, or a combination of solar and green roofs. There are a couple of different combinations. So what does that mean? So for example, a typical Whole Foods is just above the 25,000 square feet. If we say, well, how big of a building are we talking about? What a lot of developers also might find is that the HVAC systems that are required once we begin to put on green roofs can be downsized. So there's a give and take that on the roof, this certain percentage of green roof that then is being installed can be replaced with something else. So
it makes the space use more efficient.
It makes the roof more efficient, the space more efficient, yeah.
So as people look at it, they need only look around the Colorado environment for what it might look like.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. The Denver Botanic Garden has tested a number of native plants that has a wealth of different kind of text. When we talk about design for green roofs, different textures of plants, different colors, seasonal change, seasonal flowering, but also are adapted to these harsh conditions that we have here that are stress tolerant, that can thrive on very little water, but also take that blast when we get those events every now and then, these heavy rainfalls. They can actually help mitigate and hold some of that water. It's another big problem for buildings. If you think about a block downtown Denver, if you look at it from above, some of these city blocks just don't have any place to treat stormwater. There's barely a street tree. And these buildings are required to take care of the stormwater that falls in an event. And what they are forced to do is to put in a big vault. So it's kind of like a tub. There's an overflow. Water just is held there. So you don't release that out to the stormwater sewer system. You are required as a building owner to slow and hold that, which is, of course, part of the ordinance, is that we slow this water and hold it and release it later.
I think we saw a lot in the hurricanes in Houston this summer. One of the effects was that there is so much concrete and not enough vegetation.
Yes, exactly.
It had significant impacts on the stormwater.
One of the things that happened actually in Katrina was that the buildings that had green roofs stayed in place because these systems were heavy, they were weighed down. And so this thing about insurance, that there might also be insurance savings associated with having a green roof layer on your building.
What do we see in Denver now in terms of green roofs?
There are actually many green roofs. We have a green roof with grasses on campus. The Justice Center has a green carpet. EPA, 20,000 square feet of green roof. I have two projects, one downtown, one riverfront, that also similar to REI is a parking garden, you could say. The Gathering Place out on Colfax and High, they have a green roof garden playground on their fourth floor. And we've put up green screens so the kids can play and there are no walls that are, you know, falling down on cars below or people below. And these green screens are vegetated. So they shade, they cool, they provide habitat for birds.
As professor of landscape architecture and urbanism, how do you get your students at CU Denver interested in the concept of green roofs?
I originally grew up in Denmark, and I continuously take students from UCD, architecture, landscape architecture, planning students, to Copenhagen every summer on a study abroad to teach them about livability. I've worked on green roof projects or green infrastructure projects over the past 20 years, and many of them internationally, many of them also in Europe. So I kind of have one foot in both. For the cities of Europe, they have the similar problems that we have here in the States. the populations are getting bigger in cities. Our stormwater sewer systems are maximized, and we have to change them out, but there isn't really any money set aside anywhere for that. In some ways, I feel that, you know, Europe has sort of seen a light in the not just the benefits of stormwater quantity, but it's a big one. And urban heat island effect, it's another big one.
Yeah, so the ordinance calls for either green roofs or solar panels or a combination thereof. How does that work?
It's a really great question because there's a symbiotic relationship between green roofs and solar panels. So solar PV production, solar panels is not the hotter the better. When they reach 25 Celsius, which is about 77 Fahrenheit, the production of electricity actually begins to go down. So green roofs can help lower that ambient temperature and increase the PV production. So studies show that that increase is about 6 to 8%. Now, in return, in this climate, the relief that's created from these solar panels is really important to green roofs. Because, you know, like June, July, August, we have these extremely hot months and sun many, many hours during the day. This is also where the solar panels, if they're spaced correctly, they can increase the life, the longevity, and the health of the living system below.
So it makes solar panels more efficient, and solar panels in turn make the living vegetation grow better.
Exactly. So that's actually one of the things that we are studying at the College of Architecture and Planning. We're collaborating with College of Engineering and Applied Science. And for me as an educator, if I had to put that hat on for a moment, green infrastructure, green roofs is an incredibly fun subject to bring to the table between disciplines. So we're looking at projects where we can study the benefits both as raised real estate, public affairs, human health, and specifically now with the engineers, if about that study of solar and green roof and that symbiotic relationship, we have students build little prototypes and measure that that actually is true. So similar to the studies, the scientific studies that are out there, the students also were showing that in our climate, it's the same. We can also raise the efficiency. They were showing about 4 to 6%.
So it sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm, not only among students, but among your colleagues in different disciplines.
Yes, absolutely. Using green infrastructure is already in educational settings, and having this cross-disciplinary discussion and understanding the benefits across various disciplines, across various sectors, in for builders, for the public, for city municipalities. Yeah, but that there's this sort of cross-disciplinary great opportunity using green infrastructures.
What's your best hope for the long-term impact of this initiative?
I hope, and this is what my main research is about, to have much more biomass, much more living biomass in cities. I think it's the number one key for human health, for city resilience, for smarter cities, is to have more nature in cities. And that goes for all the surfaces, not just roofs, but walls, the buildings themselves, through buildings, between buildings, under buildings.
Thank you, Lila. We appreciate your insight into this area that people in Denver and across the country need to know more about.
Well, thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for CU on the Air. The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConlogue, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.